From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. Southwest Florida's own award-winning author and historian Robert Maycomer is out with the latest novel in his honor series, following the adventures of protagonist and U.S. Naval officer Peter Wake. The action in The Assassin's Honor moves between Tampa and Key West 123 years ago and is inspired by real events, many of them here in Florida, and their lasting impact on world history. Maycomer joins us in studio. Plus, November 1st marked the start of open enrollment for people to sign up for health care coverage through the Affordable Care Act. We'll take a closer look at what Florida residents need to know and what's changed for enrollees this year. We'll also explore the latest research on rates of uninsured kids in Florida and around the nation. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live from WGCU News. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. Open enrollment is underway for people to sign up for health insurance through the Affordable Care Act. Residents of Florida and three dozen other states that did not create their own health insurance marketplaces can sign up through the federalhealthcare.gov website. The process has been streamlined this year, and penalties for those who choose to go without insurance will be increasing. We'll explore what else has changed this year and what Floridians need to know. Plus, researchers with the Center for Children and Families at Georgetown University's Health Policy Institute have released a new report indicating that the rate of uninsured children in the U.S. is at a new record low, due in part to the Affordable Care Act. We'll take a closer look at the numbers and how Florida fares compared to the rest of the nation. That conversation's ahead later this hour. But first, action, murder, an assassination plot, and Florida history converge in award-winning author and Southwest Florida resident Robert Maycomer's new novel, The Assassin's Honor. It's the 12th installment in the naval thriller series following the life and career of fictional U.S. naval officer Peter Wake, beginning in the days of the Civil War through the first decade of the 20th century. The book spotlights Florida's maritime history and the critical role of the U.S. Navy in America's expansion. This newest installment transports readers to scenes stretching from Tampa to the Florida Keys, among other locations, in 1892, and includes an assassination plot against Cuban writer and revolutionary philosopher José Martí, who was a central figure in the movement to overthrow Spanish colonial rule. Joining me now in studio is author Robert Maycomer himself. In addition to his novels, Maycomer is a historian, lecturer, commentator, and longtime local resident. His research for his books and lectures on naval and maritime history have taken him throughout the globe. He's also a defense consultant, providing his expertise to a variety of government and military organizations, including the Center for Army Analysis at Fort Belvoir near Washington, D.C., the U.S. European Command in Germany, and the Supreme Headquarters Allied Powers Europe, which is the central command of NATO military forces, to name a few. Robert Maycomer, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. It's always fun to be here. Thank you.
And I invite listeners to join the conversation as well. You can connect with Maycomer by calling 1-877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media, or join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And to start off, can you set the scene a bit for us to when and where this latest story of Peter Wake's adventures begins? I thought it was interesting noting that flights between Fort Myers and Havana began this week. Now we're going back to 1892. We find ourselves in the midst of Cuba's War of Independence from Spain. Take us from there. Give us a little bit of a historical primer, if you will.
Yeah, the Cubans fought for 30 years, from 1868 to 1898, to get independence from Spain. During that time, there were three hot wars, and the final hot war was going to be starting in just a couple of years. In 1892, it hadn't started yet, but there was plenty of espionage and sabotage and action. And we find the story starting in December of 1892, and Peter Wake has finally had his life turn around for the better. He's back at sea. He's been given command of a new ship, the Bennington. He is in a place that he knows very well, the Caribbean. And probably most importantly, he actually has love come into his house or into his life. And he found a woman that actually loves him and puts up with the Navy. The problem is she is politically incorrect.
Mm.
and he's being counseled by his best friends and his peers, be careful of this woman.
She's not his first love interest who had unpopular political opinions.
Yes, and but this one, he feels that maybe this is the right one. This is it. He's been a widower now for 11 years, so he's very lonely, very melancholy, to use their term back then. And he's finally thinking, maybe I can be successful in my career and happy in my life. And then he gets a summons to go to Key West.
Oh, okay. Okay. That's a great way to introduce it there. We don't want to give away too much here.
No.
But maybe you could tell us just a little bit more, going back to setting that scene, about the role the U.S. played in Cuba's War of Independence, or what the U.S. felt it had at stake.
You know, the United States played different roles depending on who was president. Mm. At various points, we tried to buy Cuba from the Spanish. They refused every time. We tried to help the Cubans for their independence. And then in 1892, all the way from 92 until about 96, we were officially neutral and in their war of independence, and prevented the Cubans from bringing supplies, medicines, people, and munitions to Cuba from this country. The Coast Guard and the actually it was the Revenue Service then. And the Navy was stopping a lot of their supply missions and preventing them from going through because they were enforcing the neutrality orders from President Cleveland.
Hmm.
When President Cleveland left office, the new president, William McKinley, was pro-Cuban. And by that point, the media had taken over the description, the topic, as it were, and created a groundswell of support across America for the Cuban cause.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and go to the phones now and take a call from Glenn in New York. Glenn, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. You're on the air.
Okay. Thank you very much. How are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing fine.
This is the Chief.
Oh. Hi, Chief. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm looking forward to reading a book, and I just wonder if you got it out on Kindle yet.
It is out on Kindle, yes. It is out.
Yeah,
and,
well.
And for the listeners, I should say that this is a longtime reader, and he was a very senior petty officer, career petty officer in the United States Coast Guard.
Well, thanks for that little plug, and you're a very famous guy in the U.S. Navy. But anyway, I'm going to get it on Kindle. I've got so many of your signed books, I don't have hardly any room for them anymore, so I hope that'll work.
Oh, there's always room for one more of my books. Come on. There's always room for one more.
All right. Well, Glenn, thank you so much for the call. Really appreciate you getting in touch with us.
He picks up with another girlfriend.
Yes, he does. This one's even
now,
more...
Go ahead.
This one's even more politically incorrect than the other ones.
Well, that's going to be hard. So, and you also need to promote him, too. He's been, he's due for a promotion.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He's overdue for a promotion. But, of course, Peter Wake is the kind of guy that sometimes scares people in Washington because he's absolutely straight arrow honest.
Oh, yeah. I really enjoy reading his encounters with his the superior officers. I think we've all been in his shoes a couple of times.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for calling.
Okay, Bob, and say hi to Nancy, and we hope to see you guys soon.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Well, I think Glenn really speaks to, the dedication of your readers. They've dubbed themselves Wakeians.
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that. And I understand you interact with them quite a bit on social media.
Yeah, I do. I'm very, very proud of my readers. My readers call themselves Wakeians. They call themselves that after the main character, Peter Wake. And I have a lot of fun with my readers. Other authors, we sit around at book festivals and things, and we talk about things, and they're all jealous of how much fun I have with my readers. We do reader rendezvous. We're having one on Pine Island on the 14th, which is a five-hour-long book party with live Cuban music and tropical food and drinks. We're going to be having a reader rendezvous in Cuba next year. We have them in Key West. We have them all over the place. So I do a lot of fun things with my readers.
Right. And you know, beyond your relationship with the readers, I wanted to ask also about your relationship with this character you've created. You've been writing about him for more than 10 years. Oh, yeah. I don't know exactly how long.
About 20 now.
About 20 now.
Yeah,
okay.
Almost.
Is much of Wake's character, do you kind of base it on yourself or people that you've known in your life? Or do you even sometimes just find yourself in a situation and thinking, what would Peter Wake do?
Well, I get that question a lot. Am I Peter Wake? No, I'm not. I'm not as nice a guy as Peter Wake. And I modeled him on various men that I've known and served with and you know, over the years. Peter Wake is the kind of guy that I think every man would want to be, but other things get in our way. There's a longstanding joke among my readers that Peter Wake, about 40% of my readers are women, and they're all in love with Peter Wake because he's the man they want to marry. But his friend, Sean Rourke, the Irish guy,
yes,
is the one they want to spend a weekend with. So, because he's far more fun than Wake. But Wake evolves throughout these novels. He is, at this point, he's getting to be, you know, he's in his 50s. He has the same problems everybody else does. Some of his children are underachievers. Some are openly rebellious. He's very lonely. He has problems at work, you know, things like that. But finally, in 1892, in this book, everything's looking good. In fact, it's looking so good, he doesn't trust it.
Yeah, and probably shouldn't.
And then he gets this word to go to Key West because there's this little problem he has to take care of.
Mm. Well, tell us about the research that went into writing The Assassin's Honor. You know, where do you turn to for information, you know, to make sure that your historical context, mm-hmm, that you're creating and crafting the story is accurate?
Well, I am very fortunate that I have a team of people that help me on my academic research in this book, and I always thank them. So you can always look through the acknowledgments and see who they are. I also do a detailed bibliography. I'm a very, very rare novelist in that, so that you can actually read some of the research that I have used. And I also do endnotes by chapter, so that you can see the epilogue and some of the background information on some of this. But it takes me about 2 years to do the academic research for a novel. And then I do the what we call eyeball recon, the actual places that are in the novel. For instance, in this one, you will get to see a little bit about Kingston, Jamaica. That's a very brief look at that. You'll get to see Yucatan, Mexico, and find out what was going on there, Key West, Florida, and Tampa, Florida. Several years ago, I drew upon a voyage that I made several years ago to Yucatan, Mexico. And I have people that are dear friends of mine that live in Yucatan, and they help me on the research. So I draw upon my personal experiences in these places and the academic experience of researching. The academic research gives you the facts of history. The personal experience gives you the flavor,
okay,
of the culture and the place.
In reference to this eyeball recon, you know, I can understand why that would be essential, that you know, you see, mm-hmm, the place yourself before you're going to write about it and describe,
yes,
it. But I imagine there's got to be a whole nother level of difficulty to that when you're writing about events that happened more than 100 years ago, because you got to look at it through that lens. It's not going to look the same necessarily.
You know, a lot of places, though, haven't changed. Hmm. When I wrote about the South Pacific, most of the places I was in the South Pacific for 7 years had not changed. The same way when I was writing about the Mekong River in Cambodia, it hadn't changed. In the deserts of Africa when I was there, that hasn't changed. So when you're writing the book, you want to get that flavor because you want to write it more vividly, because my goal is to take the reader along with Peter Wake. I want the reader to taste the food, smell the smoke, hear the shouts, you know, appreciate the music, and There's no substitute for actually going there.
Right. What's the longest you've spent researching any one particular book? I would imagine it would be the seventh installment in the series, but I...
The seventh one was about Vietnam and Cambodia. Mm-hmm. And no, actually the longest one normally it takes me about 4 years to do a book. But I have a book coming out every year. So that means I'm working on five books at any one time in different phases of the project. But the longest time to research a book was 7 years, and that was the one about the South Pacific, Honors Rendered.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of leads into another question I had regarding a character who's central to this book, Jose Marti.
Yeah.
And he, you know, Peter Wake was introduced to him, I know, in at least two
yes.
of your previous books.
Yes. He and Wake are old friends.
Did you have the Assassin's Honor in mind when you were writing these previous books?
Yes.
Okay. So you do have different projects going on at different phases all the
– Yes. I And one of the few people that knows what's going to happen in the future with Peter Wake. There are 22 books planned in the series. So I know generally what's going to happen and where and things like that. But Jose Marti was a man world-renowned. He was the hope of Latin America because he addressed a lot of the issues that all of them – although the countries were mostly independent by then, they still had the same problems. And he was ahead of his time in many ways. Wake and he are friends. They have a symbiotic relationship. They exchange information, intelligence information. And they have become very close friends. And throughout this book, you will find out what happened. You will be amazed. Read the end notes because you're going to find out a lot of it's absolutely true, all the parts about Marti are, and their friendship will be cemented in a very, very close way.
Yeah, I did look into it myself. I'm sure not nearly as deeply as you did, but just to see if Marti really was in Florida at the time that the book takes place in.
He was here a lot. Marti was a very dangerous man to the Spanish because it was Marti that cemented together the entire very diverse Cuban independence movement. And what I find fascinating is, as a man, he was not a warrior. He was diminutive. He looked more like sort of he was a poet and a writer and a tremendous speaker. But physically, he was not an imposing, statuesque guy. But when he spoke and when you looked into his eyes and if you knew what he had been through in his life, he was an extremely powerful person.
And, you know, Jose Marti, you know, being in Florida, you know, the Ybor City area, mm-hmm. you know, we had the cigar factories mm-hmm. there, which were very popular.
Yep.
Was the Cuban independence movement prominent in the Tampa area in that time?
It was huge. The Cuban Americans and the Anglo-Americans – of Florida were the ones that materially assisted, and they were assisted, of course, by the ones in Charleston, New Orleans, New York City. But it was the Florida was the real catalyst for a lot of this. Yeah.
All right. And I wanted to go back to, again, some of the research that you've done mm-hmm. for maybe other books as mm-hmm. well. And telling me about the time that you took this 10,000-mile voyage along a German freighter,
mm-hmm.
You actually experienced, you know, modern-day pirates trying to board the ship you were on?
Yes.
It's crazy. Tell me about
it. I was writing a book and researching another book and getting ready to go on book tour for another book. And for 10,000 miles, I was on a German freighter in the Caribbean and on the west coast of South America all the way down to lower Chile. And in Colombia – at a place that is very misnamed called Buenaventura. There were some real nasty guys on shore that took exception to me being there. And then when we got out to sea that night on the freighter, some of their compadres attacked us, and they were modern-day pirates. Well, the beginning of the book I was writing has to do with piracy in 1869, and I rewrote the start of that book based upon what my experiences were with those pirates. What's the look in their eye? No, by the way, none of them acted like Johnny Depp. These were not fun guys.
Yeah.
This was a business. And at one point, I was on a ship searchlight and had it on one of the pirate boats that was coming alongside. And the lead pirate looks up at me with his AK-47, and you could see where he was trying to decide whether to go ahead and kill me or not. And his eyes were absolutely, completely emotionless and cold.
Hmm. Wow. Talk about putting real experience
obviously, in. He didn't kill me because I got to write the book. And it did rather well. It was called Dishonorable Few. And I was at Walter Reed Hospital with the troops about 6 months later. And the book had just come out and I was on book tour. And it was a huge hit at Walter Reed Hospital. And a lot of them said, we identify with this.
Yeah.
So I said, well,
Well, see, but even that, as you've said or written, wasn't even the most dangerous research that you did. That was actually for the book that followed. Whenever you which takes readers to French Indochina, I think I have a quote here. That was the most fascinating yet dangerous novel to date for me to research and write. Why?
Well, in that case, a couple things happened that I did not plan on. Sometimes, these things happen. I ended up accidentally sort of getting arrested in Singapore.
Sort of getting arrested?
For weapons smuggling. Here's a tip to all the listeners out there. Follow all the rules when you're in Singapore because they don't have a sense of humor about this stuff. Yes, I was doing some research in Indonesia, Malaysia, in that area, and I brought back some weapons and I was mailing them home, bladed weapons, not firearms. And the lady at the customs office saw them in the metal detector and yelled out the words you never want to hear. She was yelling, weapons, weapons, weapons. And before I knew it, I was in a room with a naked light bulb hanging down from the ceiling. And I was interrogated for a long time. To make a long story real short, I managed to talk my way out of that. And I got the head of customs to help me mail them home. And I am the only kid on Pine Island that has a written exemption to bring weapons into Singapore.
Right.
I mean, it was getting a little dicey there for a while.
Wow, wow.
And I also had some problems up on the Mekong River and some minor cobra juice poisoning. So yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, award-winning author, historian, and adventurer in his own right, Robert Maycomer, joins us in studio today. We're taking a closer look at the latest installment in his series of maritime historical fiction, The Assassin's Honor. You can connect with Maycomer with your comments and questions. Phone lines are open at 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 877-428-8255. Join the live Twitter chat using the hashtag Gulf Coast Live or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Excuse me. And I think we mentioned earlier that this latest novel finds Wake commanding his own cruiser, the USS Barrington. What kind of research goes into understanding how, the various vessels that Peter Wake is on or function and, really the day-to-day life of crew members aboard a vessel like that?
Well, obviously I do a lot of reading. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of research. And I also was on an 1896 battlecruiser called the Olympia, which is up in Philadelphia. And I spent time on her in order to get that eyeball recon, that what's it smell like?
Mm-hmm.
What does it feel like? What does it sound like? Ships make noises even when they're at dock because the wood contracts and expands and so does the metal on a metal ship. So I spent a lot of time on her just to get those feelings, and I've been on a lot of various ships of different kinds, warships, freighters, liners, you name it. So.
All right. And this might be a little out of line with the question we've been doing so far, but why do you have the word honor in the title of all of these books?
No, I get that question a lot. And when I decided to do this series, I wanted to do an American story. Many people had written about the Napoleonic period from the British point of view. I wanted to tell our story from being a continental power to a global power, and the Navy was in the forefront of all that in the latter 1800s and early 1900s. And the concept of honor was very, very real to a lot of naval officers, I would say almost all, and still is in our military. And the first book came out right after 9/11, and there was a resurgence in the concept and appreciation of a life of honor. And so that happened to be – I wasn't planning that. It just happened to come out that way. And it really resonated with my readers, very much so.
All right. Do you find most of your readers are history buffs?
Yeah. Most of my readers are listeners of NPR, actually. NPR has some great audiences that read books and want to be intrigued and challenged by these kinds of things. So, yeah.
And I wanted to ask also, it's – you know, when we start this book, it's been nearly 4 years in Peter Wake's life between the time of your last book, Honors mm-hmm. Rendered, and this novel. Mm-hmm. But then looking at past installments in this series, I saw that, for instance, the time between Honor Bound and Honorable Lies was only about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So what dictates those sorts of decisions? Is it primarily about just looking at history, where you want to put the character and where it makes sense? Or I guess what do you do there?
John, that's a great question. And nobody's ever asked me that.
Oh.
That's very good. What I do, the things that dictate that are the events of history. And so in the year 1888 and 1889, there were several things that were happening all over the place that I really felt the need to write about, to bring to the light of day. And that's why there are several books about Peter Wake that take place in that time period.
All right.
And one is in Cuba, one is in Haiti. And one is in Samoa in the South Pacific.
All right. And I've read that your books will follow Peter Wake's life and career through 1908. Is that a hard date, 1908?
Well, his career will officially end in 1908.
But
I have a feeling he may get called out after that because that's, you know, what they used to do and that's what they still do. They will call a commissioned officer out for special projects.
Okay.
So as World War I is looming on the horizon, they will call him out.
Okay. All right.
One last hurrah.
Because I was looking at your ambitious schedule for, you know, you've already got stuff in the works for books that you don't plan to release until, you know, 2021. And I'm going, well, wait, we're already in 1892. How are we going to cram all this in before 1908?
Well, you know, I write about the real events, so it's amazing what happened at the turn of the century. And so many of these things influenced and were the foundation of the way things are now. So you look around you as you read the book and go, aha, so that's how we turned out the way we are.
All right, all right. And I wanted to ask you about this the last time you were on the program, but we just didn't have the time. I was hoping you could tell me more about your work as a defense consultant.
I'm starting to wean off of that. When the sequester went through, the budget pretty much dried up on a lot of that. So, but no, I do projects and do project briefings for various organizations in Department of Defense and some other organizations around the world. And it's very serious, intense work. And I help to illuminate ideas for them and to give them some options of strategic thinking that they haven't thought of before.
All right. Very interesting. Well, we are about out of time for this portion of the program. But thank you so much to my guest, author, historian, commentator, and defense consultant, Robert Makehomer. The latest installment in his honor series of maritime historical fiction is titled The Assassin's Honor. There's more information about Makehomer and about the book online at robertmakehomer.com. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, and I hope everybody comes to the book party on the 14th on Pond Island.
All right. Yeah, 5-hour party, food.
Yep.
All right. Looking forward to it. Well, we're taking a short break, but when we return, open enrollment for health care coverage through the Affordable Care Act began November 1st and runs through the end of January. We'll talk with the regional director of Southwest Florida's ACA Navigator program about what's changed this year and what enrollees need to know. We'll also take a closer look at new research into the impact of the Affordable Care Act when it comes to rates of uninsured children in the U.S. That conversation's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU NPR for Southwest Florida.